Okay, this Shabbos we're going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parshas Devarim. Of course, at the same point in time, we will usher in the period of Tisha B'Av on Erev Tisha B'Av with the reading of the Haftorah of Shabbos Chazon. The book of Devarim begins, Eila HaDvarim, these are the words that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke, and the question has to be raised, what do you mean, these are the words? These are the only words? What happened to everything else that Moshe Rabbeinu said? These are the ones? What happened to, why are we highlighting these words? So the late, great Reb Nissen Alpert, Zechat Tzadik Levracha, explains that these are Moshe's words of Tochacha. These are his words of reproof. And that's the primary focus of the book of Devarim. At the same time, there are expansions on the words of the Torah from the first four Svarim as well. There's a duality going on over here. It teaches us that reproof without Torah words are meaningless, but Torah with Musar combine in order to impact and to endure. We're also told that after Moshe Rabbeinu finishes his opening shot towards Bnei Yisrael and his words for them, he turns to God and he says, Eicha salavadi, right? I couldn't handle it by myself. How am I supposed to handle? So God told him, listen, select people for you who are wise and intelligent and known. Reshachter Shalita pointed out to us that he recalled being in Boston in onset and recalling his Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik insisting that even on the weekdays, in other words, the short Kriyas HaTorah, which is read at Shabbos Mincha and on Mondays and Thursdays prior to the reading of Shabbos Devarim, that Rav Soloveitchik insisted that they read all the way up to Shlishi. And Rav Shechter always thought that was an interesting idea, but he explained that since one of the main reasons for the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash was due to the inappropriate judges and the corruption, and the opposite is being identified here in the second Aliyah, Parshas Devarim, that it was only fitting that in the weeks prior to Tisha B'Av, this idea be underscored repeatedly. We're also told, Habu lochem anashim chachamim unevonim v'yidum l'shivteichem. The Medrash explains that a judge needs to have seven attributes. Chachamim, nevonim, yiduim, as well as sareal, the people who are anshei emes, anshei chayo, sonei batza, etc. People who represent the ideals of what it means to be a judge. And those four are not recorded over here, they get recorded later. And so why couldn't they keep all the seven attributes all together? And so the Medrash explains that if one can't fulfill all seven attributes in a judge, at least we should find the four of them. We find, Eish Yischael Mi Yimsa. What does the Pasuk of Eish Yischael have to do with things over here? In other words, the Medrash ends with this quotation of Eish Yischael Mi Yimsa. And why is it that we end off over here with this phrase? So Rav Schlesinger explains, in the name of the Aderet, who is the father-in-law of Rav Kook, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and a major Talmid Chacham in his own right, often not necessarily fully understood in of himself. So the Aderet quotes and notes that there's a reference over here in the abbreviation. It should be Anshei Chayel Mikol Yisrael, not Eish Yischael. It's Aleph Chaz. Mem Yud is not Eish Yischael Mi Yimsa, it's Anshei Chayel Mikol Yisrael, and that a person has to keep that in mind. Sometimes we have to be careful when we figure out our abbreviations, we can go way, 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 way off. Here's one such example. We're told also that Moshe Rabbeinu said, Hadavar Asher Yiksha Mikem Takrivon Elayu Shmativ, that which is too hard for you, bring to me and I'll listen to you. So Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Tversky, Zechat Tzadik Livracha, noted that the pasuk doesn't say that Moshe will promise to solve it, just that he would listen. And quoting the Ger Rebbe, Rabbi Tversky explains that sometimes just being there to listen helps someone figure out solutions to his own dilemma. That's such a fundamental principle in life. Sometimes we just need to have the ability of somebody provide a different perspective for us to be able to listen and to read. Mariv Rabbi Rav Shechter Shalita has pointed out in personal conversations. Also, Mariv Rabbi Rabbi Blau, that sometimes people come and try to seek advice. They don't tell them what to do. They help them understand what they're trying to say. And I think that's a much better system in terms of being able to grow through experiences. And it's something that we should probably be involved in and think about when we are raising our kids or our students or the younger generation. Sometimes they don't need us to tell them what to do. They just need us to listen to them, to help them within the process. Anyway, the people turn around, Vateiragnu ba'aleichem, that you complained in your tents. Whose tents are we talking about over here? So Rav David Feinstein Zatzal noted that the people were complaining in the tents refers to an allusion to the Jewish wives and mothers who maintained the home and nurtured the next generation. And that when Bnei Yisrael cried in their tents at the time of the Meraglim, that meant that future generations would learn to complain and maintain that unnecessary tears are part of Jewish tradition. By the way, it's a destructive tradition. It's something that needs to be identified and slowed down. So then, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has enough. He says, Rav lechem sova sahara zeh penu lechem tzafona. Enough of going around this mountain, turn to the north. The Klei Yakar interprets that we ought not flaunt our wealth to the outside, but rather keep it internal, not to raise the wrath of the Goyim. And Rav Yaakov Bender Shalita explains that this is not only true of the nations of the world, but also internally, that it's not good to provoke Jews either, because causing jealousy or resentfulness is frankly just not worth it. So then we're told, Kumu, Su'u, V'ivru, arise, carry, and pass, and pass. And Hashem's announcement about capturing the land happened on Tu B'Av, according to the Gemara in Bava Basra, which became a great day of celebration because of the message to capture the land. And Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, Zechet Tzadok Livracha, the founder of Kfar Roe, explained that the joy was a parallel to the sadness of Tisha B'Av, and it's also a response to it. So Rav Neria added that therefore it, like Yom Kippur, are the two happiest days on the Jewish calendar. Yom Kippur is a day of forgiveness, and Tu B'Av is a response and a day of forgiveness for the things that led to Tisha B'Av and the challenges that came along with it as well. Finally, in the Haftarah, we're told, Yisrael yada ami lo hisbonan. My nation didn't contemplate. What exactly is hisboninus, and why is it so important? So Rav Ovi Zatzal explained that the Ramchal compares Torah to a fire, and every word like a coal. Left on its own, a coal will merely glimmer. Right? It'll just glimmer on its own for a little while. But if it's fanned by toiling in order to understand and fully grasp Torah, each coal will burst into a fiery flame. And that fanning, answer of the Wolbe, is achieved through the process of hisboninus. It's the motor that triggers the seichel, but at the same time, it's also the tool that a person uses to get to know himself. Sometimes we need to take the time out of our schedules, out of the humdrum and the pressures of life, to sometimes turn around and think about who we are, what we are, and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. And that is a challenge of hisboninus as well. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu give us the wisdom to know the hisboninus. And may we go from strength to strength, from chayil to chayil. And may HaKadosh Baruch Hu send the gula shleima b'mehira b'yameinu, Shabbat shalom, and a meaningful fast to all.